keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Oh, it's a sad day in America today. Potential presidential candidate just went on TV and said we need to ban all of a certain group of people from a certain religion from entering the country. Welcome back, everybody, to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. I'm really happy to be back with you. Hopefully you caught our last show on Wednesday. It was a great one. We talked about the situation in San Bernardino. And, of course, we kind of predicted exactly the kind of rhetoric that we're starting to see thrown around by these reactionary candidates. I'd like to welcome my co-host, longtime co-host, onto the show, DB Schwartz. How are you doing tonight, man?
Yeah, I mean, you hit it on the head, dude. Like, we've been talking about history repeating itself, and never more has it been so after you get a guy that's probably commanding the heartstrings of 40 or 50 million Americans say something like that. I mean, we talked about it last show. If they're going to start jailing or detaining people or basically, you know, putting them under 24/7 surveillance for a religion, which is something that's fairly fluid, they're going to do it for anything they want.
It's a slippery slope to step our foot onto. And it's a slope that is, you know, once we step onto it, it's really easy to slide right down it. And as you mentioned, you know, this is history repeating itself. This is the same exact rhetoric that the Nazis, that Hitler used in his rise to power. You know, but when is enough? First, it's a religious group, and then it's all your political enemies, and then it's the Reichstag, and then it's all the communists and all everybody else. You know what I mean? And this is really, really dangerous rhetoric coming out, and it's something that we need to be really aware of, considering world events and things that are going on. We're gonna get into all this stuff later on in the show. First, I want to welcome our other special guest, Jake Anderson. What's up, Jake?
Not much, Nick. I'm I don't know what it is. I'm just feeling really optimistic.
Honestly, I hope you're serious. Because
I'm not, unfortunately.
Okay.
But I think you have to look at the silver lining somehow. And let's look at it like this. Let's look at it like this. The train is out of control, and the train is on fire, and people are burning to death and suffering on the train. And so if you fast track the train so that it crashes quicker, the people that are suffering on the train won't suffer as much.
There's one way to look at it, you know, the bright side of it.
Hey, I'm the eternal optimist, Nick.
Well, you know, there is a bright spot here because on Saturday, we posted a meme on Facebook, on the Anti-Media's Facebook page, which more or less compared the rhetoric going on now to back in the 20s when it was segregation and it's, you know, saying, oh, no black people allowed or, you know, white only. And then, you know, World War II era, it was, you know, the Japanese were unwelcome and obviously we the U.S. threw them into internment camps. And now in 2015, I don't know if you guys saw it, but there was a store somewhere in Florida that put up, you know, a Muslim free zone store, and it's not the first time it's happened. There
right.
was
yeah.
Recently so. there was a gun store that said Muslims weren't welcome, you know, so this is the rhetoric that we see being thrown around right now, and we posted that meme making these comparisons. And when I woke up on Sunday morning, the meme had 200 and something thousand shares. It had already reached 35 million people on Facebook, most of which from the United States.
Good job, buddy.
Yeah, but by Sunday evening, the meme had reached about 50 million people. And I woke up this morning and I had been banned from Facebook. Too many Trump supporters reported my meme, and Facebook decided it violated their protocols, and I woke up and now I'm banned from Facebook from posting for 30 days. Fortunately, I have a backup.
Fascism, dude.
Fortunately, I have a backup profile, so the Anti-Media Facebook page is going to be continuously running. We're still going to be bringing out these stories and these awesome memes. Hopefully, everyone saw the promo meme for tonight. It was a tweet, but the text says, "New test, replace the word Muslims with the word Jews." And,
yes.
then ask yourself, do I sound like an effing Nazi? Because you do.
Nick, I shared that. I shared that 2 hours ago before I even know you were going to use it as your as the promo for the show. Great meme, man.
I'm glad you did, man, because I think it's time for people to check reality. Because if we don't get this message through soon enough, the United States is going to become exactly like Nazi Germany became. And I'm, in many ways, you know, in many ways, I don't want to downplay how bad it already is. We're already the greatest empire in the world at the moment. We are the largest empire out there. You know, we're already got the NSA. We've already got mass surveillance. We just posted an article on the Anti-Media on Friday regarding how there's already a federal firearms database, which it violates federal law. You know, that's already something that's going on, you know. So there's already a lot of fascist leanings within our government, even though we're not being run in a total fascist dictatorship at the moment. We still have the illusion of democracy. You know, we have an oligarchy. An oligarchy is not quite fascism, but it's, you know, almost as bad, but it could be worse, you know. And Trump, with this rhetoric, is looking to make things a lot worse.
He's all for, you know, he's all for the metadata. He's all for, you know, he said Jade Helm was basically going to identify who's going to be a problem, including dissidents. I mean, the guy's the military-industrial complex on steroids. He really is. And if people don't think that we're going to devolve into something like a gender-neutral draft, which they're setting up right now, you're kidding yourself.
Exactly. And, you know, I wanted to bring that up, too. In a little bit here, because this is, you know, people may think that, oh, this just happened, you know, that the timing just happens to be, you know, we're gonna start allowing women to be drafted. I guess forcing women to be signing up for the Selective Service, which basically means you're putting your name on the draft list in case these assholes start World War III. They're gonna draft women as well, not just boys and young men. Women are gonna be thrown onto the front lines as well.
What does that say about their motivations, too, that they're going to go ahead and give away our ability to repopulate our society should a catastrophic war take place? They don't want the society to be rebuilt. They want it torn down to the studs.
Good. Let's get rid of them.
I'm all for it. I mean, that's really the only way. It's really the only way we're going to, you know.
Social Darwinism includes top brass, too, man.
I like DB's version of events where the assholes at the top just kill each other off.
Yeah, but the problem is that they take out like half the world with them, and that's the biggest problem.
You got to imagine Henry Kissinger has some pretty tasty wings, you know, that if you want to go the cannibalism route, you know. He's got a jowl that could probably serve three or four.
The gizzards?
Yeah.
I had enough of that on Thanksgiving. I don't know if I could take any more chicken hot gizzards, but... Yeah, man. So this stuff is really winding up here, and one telltale sign that we saw emerging today was the French elections, and we've been talking about France quite a bit lately, because of the terror attack that happened over there, and you know about how it's led to a lot of this reactionary, this reactionary policies from the French government. They've taken a very fascist turn of events over there, where now they're basically putting activists on house arrest. I mean, perfectly peaceful activists, and they're just saying, "Hey, you guys can't leave your house because we don't want you on the streets." So they're putting down the First Amendment, or not First Amendment, but because they don't have the First Amendment over there. But freedom of speech is becoming a thing of the past over in France, which is pretty ironic considering the reaction to the Charlie Hebdo shootings, and everybody was like, "Oh, we got to protect freedom of speech as long as it's freedom to speak badly about Muslims." Because now, if you want to get out and give your freedom of speech out in the streets, but in the form of protest, well, good luck, because you can't really do that right now in France, because the government's going to put a clamp down on you. You know, we've also talked about how the French government has been censoring independent media. They're shutting down certain narratives in politics and going on in social media. Our website, last time I checked, was not being it was not accessible in France. It may be restored now, but I haven't checked in a couple days. But you know, this is kind of what the French government has done in reaction to the terror attack in Paris. And it's very symbolic, or not symbolic, but very much in the same cast as what the United States government did following 9/11. And so what we can see, I guess, expecting, you know, foreseeing what's going to happen following San Bernardino and whatever terror attacks happen next, because best believe that we haven't seen the end of them, is we're going to see our own government going down that same route in the form of cracking down even further, more surveillance, labeling entire groups as a threat to national security and things like that. In France, it's activists and journalists. In the United States, now it's all Muslims, even though it's only a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of people that subscribe to the Muslim religion that turn to extremism and that kind of thing. But we're going to see these kind of broad stroke policies and rhetoric coming from many of these political candidates. And what's his name? George Pataki, I think he was. He's one of these other fringe presidential candidates saying he'd go over to France and like shoot people himself or something like that. I mean, this is just
pretty much whatever Justin Amash says to do. Let's just do that.
For real, man. I mean, at least he has some common sense. But back to the point I was trying to get to here with France. They just had some elections a day or two ago, and surprise, surprise! Guess who's leading the pack now in French elections? The nationalist far right wing party. You know, so you know this is a group that has some fascist leanings. So once again, we're seeing a rise of fascism in Europe. You know, and this is, again, as DB mentioned, a repeat of history, man. This is not something to play around with. It's become pretty evident what's going on here. And it's so reactionary because none of these people are providing solutions or critiques to the actual problem. You know, and if it was legitimately Muslims, they just wanted to come here and kill us just because, then I would say, by all means, let's support Trump and what he's saying, because he's right. But it's not the case. You know what I mean? We're over there bombing the shit out of these countries for who knows how long, invading country after country after country, destabilizing country after country. Syria is just the latest one. Libya, before Syria and before that, Iraq. And, you know, we've been going at Iran for 50 years. You know, the more we keep meddling like that, the more and more there will be actual organic terrorism. People wanted to come here and hurt us because we're hurting them, you know, and it has nothing to do with our way of life. It has nothing to do with the fact that we're rich. It has nothing to do with the fact that we're free. And no, we're not going to be greeted as liberators when we go over to these countries and start invading. You know, all of those things are fabricated. They're all myths that our government and our media has sold us, because they don't, the media is not going to go walk around telling you, hey guys, you're supporting the largest empire that exists on the earth right now, and your tax money is going to kill 500,000 Iraqi kids. They're not going to tell us that. They're going to say they don't like us because we're free. You know, this is what they're going to tell us. You know, but we got to see further than that, look deeper than that. And if we don't, well, we're going to wind up voting for Trump. And this is why so many people are out there supporting this idiot. And he literally went on TV today and said, we're going to ban all Muslims from entering the country. And the crowd went wild. The crowd absolutely went wild. People are whistling. People are screaming, clapping. And I mean, it made me ashamed to be classified as an American. You know what I'm saying? It's shameful. There's a lot of idiots in this country. And guess what? They have a loud voice, louder than the people with common sense. And you know, one of those Nazi guys, I forget which one it was, but when he was going through the war tribunal after the war, after World War II, he basically said, he basically gave the blueprint to rile up an entire public, and it's the same exact thing Trump is doing.
Edward Bernays.
It wasn't Bernays, but it was based on Bernays' ideas. I think we're joined by Cassius tonight. What's going on, Cassius?
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, man, I think this is an appropriate time to Google Edward Bernays and his 1929 book, Propaganda, because that's really the playbook of modern propaganda. That book, this person, if you research, like, the whole culture, this elite-type culture that was thriving in the 1930s, that birthed the eugenics movement, that birthed Nazi Germany, you look at that culture, then we'll be closer to understanding, you know, how to deal with this very similar situation.
Exactly, man, exactly, you know, and this is stuff that's been being brought back up over and over again. And so, you know, basically the gist of what this Nazi guy was saying was that all you got to do is make a scapegoat, blame everything on them, and then anyone that doesn't buy into that propaganda, label them as anti-patriotic or against the country, or label them as sympathizers to the opposition. And that's more or less what's been going on with Trump, man. And it's a recipe for success when it comes to fascism, but it's a recipe for disaster when it comes to life in general and to a more peaceful, harmonious place that I think everyone really is trying to get to. And unfortunately, people that are supporting Trump think that the way to get to a peaceful, harmonious place is to be more violent and to treat people badly because of the way they look, or to just go and bomb the hell out of countries. I think Trump's the kind of guy that can say, hey, you know what, let's just turn Syria into glass by dropping a nuclear weapon, and his supporters would be like, yeah, let's do it. That's what we got to do. You know what I'm saying? And this is very, very scary rhetoric, man, because this is exactly what gave Hitler the ability to do what he did in Europe and just start invading countries and try to conquer the entire continent. You know what I mean? I mean, if Trump were to become president and he said, hey, we got to go invade Mexico, people that voted for him, like, yeah, that's it. Let's go do it. Let's invade Mexico. You know, and
feel gratification from it. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, and so this is very, very scary stuff. And if we don't stop it soon, we're going to be in for a big rude awakening here in the United States, and it's going to not be nice for a lot of people. And it's going to be very similar to what the German public went through. You know, I don't think the German public, if you look at them today, in general, they're not bad people. They're not racist. They don't hate Jews. They don't want to go kill any undesirables. They don't want to exterminate people that have disabilities. But they were riled up with the use of propaganda to support those kind of policies. And if they didn't support it, well, they were labeled as anti-patriotic, and the people that didn't support it were scared to speak out because they'd be labeled sympathizers, and they could have been next to be thrown into the camps. You know what I'm saying? And this is the part that makes the good people not speak out, because they're too afraid of being threatened by what these guys are talking about doing. you know, and it's not a joke. And I think people, I think a lot of people are kind of sitting by on the sidelines, kind of being a bit apathetic to it. And I don't blame them because the electoral system is pretty much trashed anyway. But I think it's time to get off the sidelines here if you don't believe in fascism, if you think fascism is the wrong route to go. And by all means, I don't think voting is going to fix it, because the only other – at this point, it looks like the only other choice, if Trump becomes the nominee, well, then it's going to be Hillary, which is just a different brand of fascism, which is not as dangerous to Muslims per se, but it's just as dangerous to the general public, because – Hillary Clinton is just as likely to get us into a major, major conflict up and, you know, up to and including World War III. And so neither option is looking very good right now. You know what I'm saying? And so now is the time, I think, for people, if they're going to stand up and stand for something, now is the time to do it, because really soon it might be too late.
Yeah, man. I just did an interview with some people from Detroit. I interviewed these people who stood in solidarity with Chicago and Detroit this weekend, and they told me a story about how they, I forgot what the exact incident was, but I think someone at a local gas station, a store in their neighborhood, pulled a gun on someone, on some, like a 12-year-old kid for no reason or something. So they're basically, they're policing their own neighborhoods. In Detroit, they have like a movement going where they're really, anytime there's something in their community that happens that they don't like, they're going to get together and make it better. You know, they're giving food to people that need it in their neighborhood, and they're, you know, practicing these things. So, yeah, well, that's exactly the kind of stuff we have to do. We have to get up now, and, you know, we're not going to reach the people that are Trump supporters and things like that. You know, we have to get creative. We, you know, there are many, many things we have to keep in mind. We can't try to wake people up in a way that is, you know, just they don't relate to it. We have to figure out how we can just do whatever it takes strategically to start building ties to people. We have to build ties to the people that support Donald Trump and things like that. It seems impossible because, you know, they're really made to be not willing to talk to people. You know, people are boxed off, and people are, you have to talk to people.
And honestly, what they're setting up here, Nick, is the best of all divisionary tactics, which is basically putting one generation against another. Essentially, everyone born, you know, after the baby boomers, trying to get everybody angry that, you know, they squandered the 60s, they wasted their opportunity, they didn't get us off fossil fuels, they allowed rampant corporatism, they were there with the 80s and the yuppie movement, and that all led to where we're at today, which is we're not ready to go into the future, we're not sustainable, we have way, way, way too many people with no real job skills, they're just doing white-collar work that eventually robots will take over too. And it's all been offshore to places where they're just killing the planet with pollution. So they're going to make the voter base get scared. They're scared of losing what they have. They're scared of losing their pensions and not being able to retire and for good reason. And more than anything, they're galvanizing the youth against them, making them pissed off against their parents and grandparents.
Yeah, most definitely. I see in my generation a lot of people that just don't have any direction. The lack of direction is astounding. People haven't learned basic lessons that generations before them learned about many different things. You know, a lot of people in my generation don't know any way to make money except for selling drugs. That is real. You know, so, but there are some people in my generation that just found a certain way to make it, and a way to make things better and have better relationships with people, even people of older generations, and those people share it to the next person, you know? So that's what I see now. I see a lot of people, my generation, you know, they'll spark some idea and then spread it amongst each other. We have strong culture, but a lot of confusion.
Yeah, man, that's the name of the game, is divide and conquer. And, you know, the things are ratcheting up over in the Middle East. The dehumanization of Muslims has been fairly successful here in the West.
whether we're talking about in the United States or in France, and rising all throughout Europe because of the, you know, refugee crisis. The news came out today that U.S. airstrike hit a what the Syrian government is claiming is a U.S. airstrike hit the Syrian military. So that's a serious increase in tensions over there. Already it's boiling over because of the Turkish shoot down of the Russian bomber. So, you know, we're getting really, really close to this powder keg, which Syria has developed into. U.S. bombing the Syrian government is a major, major increase in that. That's definitely an illegal action. It's the U.S. does not have authorization to kill anyone in the Syrian government. Congress has not authorized it, which I guess that doesn't really matter too much anymore because Congress has become kind of a symbolic form of government at this point. But this is a serious ratcheting up of tensions, and we're yet to see what the reaction is going to be from this. You know, of course, Russia and China are serious allies of the Syrian government, so I don't think they're going to take too kindly of this bombing. And also, the U.S. launched just in time, I guess. The U.S. just launched the first of its new class of destroyers for the Navy. The largest destroyer ever built for the U.S. Navy, 600 feet. Looks like a stealth bomber, but in the water. And I forget how much it costs here. $4.4 billion each. But one of the things I took from this news here is that the ship is almost fully automated. Very, very few people have to man the ship, you know, and this kind of goes to accentuate the U.S. military's pivot to more automated role. And again, looking back at history, one of the main things, one of the main reasons why the Nazi army was so effective is because they were heavily, heavily mechanized. They had a bunch of tanks, a bunch of planes, you know, a bunch of trucks, motorcycles they used a lot of. And now the U.S., obviously, anyone that's been keeping track of the drone war and stuff, this is the new frontier of mechanization, and now we've got the Navy ships to match it. Russia recently unveiled a nuclear-armed submarine drone, I believe it was. And, you know, the U.S. probably already has those as well. We probably just have it under wraps for the moment. According to intelligence services, the Russians leaked it as a way of just letting us know, hey, we've got them too. And so, you know, you got this new crazy huge ship, no telling what kind of armory it's got on it. It's kind of stealth. It looks very, very ominous. I just saw the post just before the show. But, you know,
the goal is that they want no hardware to be touched by anyone who's non-officer class. And it's simple to see why, because officers actually own stock in USA Corp. And a lot of people don't know what that is. In 1871, we went to a corporation. So, okay. Well, yeah, man, that's all I'm saying is the enlisted man's day is coming to a close.
Yeah, you know, but at the same time, we were going to talk about this draft thing. Now women are going to be drafted into the military, and we can't help but think that that's not coincidental to this ratcheting up of this major war that's brewing all around the world here. And, you know, so there still will be a role for ground forces, I believe, but they're kind of just going to be the cannon fodder, I guess you can say, and just take all the casualties. But the you know, the mechanization, the drones, the ships, all the things that we're developing right now are going to be doing most of the heavy bombing and blowing up infrastructure and that kind of thing. And they're going to send the troops in there just to clean up, you know, mop it up when it's done. You know, this is a really interesting prospect here. And, you know, we've been talking about this for a while, DB, about reining in the drone systems and the military-industrial complex, because sooner or later, the human conscious is not going to play a role in this stuff, you know, because when there's no longer soldiers, there's no one to say, hey, I'm not going to shoot that guy. We already know that that's not very reliable. We already saw what the Nazis did with their propaganda, and they tricked all their people into killing a bunch of people. The U.S. public has been tricked into supporting all these wars for a long time now. But there still are people out there like, you know, Chelsea Manning and Edward Snowden. The human fallibility, you know, the human conscience is still there with some of these people, and they could leak documents that show us the horrible things that go on over there. But sooner or later, when the entire force is mechanized, well, there's no longer going to be a whistleblower. What are you going to do? You know, are you going to ask a drone to tell us the truth? No. You know, it's not going to happen. And you know, the last hope would be for hackers to be able to break into that stuff. And, you know, who knows? Who knows if that's going to be possible? France is talking about banning Tor, which is like the dark net, you know, and I wouldn't doubt that the U.S. would come soon after that. Tor was developed by the United States Defense Services for government use, but it made its way to the public, and now hackers use it, and anyone that's trying to maintain anonymity online use it. But countries in the West, democracies, supposedly, are starting to want to ban this stuff, and they're trying to get rid of internet anonymity altogether. England, the UK, is leading the pack in Orwellian censorship and Orwellian spying. They're spying on every single person that's in the UK. Every communication that comes in and out of England is spied on now and eavesdropped on. The British people have basically zero privacy, and they're kind of a testing ground for what the U.S. wants to implement. And now France is moving ahead with the same kind of tactics. This is fascism rising in the West. You know, what used to be looked at as the shining democracies in the World War II era have now assumed the role of the Nazi fascists and the Stalins and, you know, all these, you know, the West has assumed those roles. And there are opposing forces in the East like China and Russia, which for their sake are not democracies either. They're just as bad as we are, not quite as powerful yet. But there definitely are opposing forces out there, which is a recipe for a major war, and that's something that nobody wants except for these crazy lunatics that are running the show.
Yeah, it's time to get to work and, you know,
form a plan.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the solution, man. Like, all I can say now is that you got to speak up now before it's too late. Trump keeps talking about this silent majority. That's complete bullshit. That's complete propaganda. He does not have a majority. He does not have a mandate. He's got, I think, something like 30% of the Republican voter bloc. Keep in mind that at the most, turnout is going to be like 40% for United States election. If you think that slightly less than half of those are Republicans and only 30% of those support Trump, you know, there is not any kind of majority when it comes to this rhetoric, to this anti-Muslim stuff, to this fascism. You know, there's not a majority. And our meme from Saturday goes to show we reached 50 million people in 24 hours. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people resonate with this idea that we shouldn't sit there and group everyone that's Muslim into a terrorist and everyone that's Mexican into some parasite, which is what these guys are trying to do, and they're trying to dehumanize them. I mean, they're laying a foundation for what could soon turn into internment camps for Mexicans or rounding up of Muslims and throwing them out of the country or, you know, whatever. They're setting the stage for it if we allow it to happen. If good people stand by idly and allow this to happen, if we wait too long, it's going to be too late to speak up, because by then, if you speak up, then you could be the one in trouble. But right now, it's time to do it before it's too late.
Nick, buddy, you're cutting out on me, man.
Can the rest of you guys hear me? DB, can you hear me well?
Yeah, I hear you, man.
All right, cool. Jake,
yeah, I hear you.
It's probably on your end. It's time for the people that are standing by but that are actually, you know, going about their lives and have common sense. That's the majority. That's the real silent majority. The silent majority needs to stand up now before it's too late, man, because, you know, in 5-10 years' time from now or even less, you know, depending on the unforeseen things that could happen at any time, you know, there can be a major shift. And we talked about this last show about people trying to get the hell out of the country. I mean, there's already a phenomenon of Mexican citizens leaving the country at a faster rate than they're entering in, you know, and you can't help but think that maybe there's some kind of reasoning behind that. One of them may be their demonization, two, maybe the economy, and three, maybe something that we don't even can't really put our finger on. It's just happening, you know. And so, you know, sooner or later, people are going to, if we don't step up right now, and the good people, if they stay silent. And it's like that old saying, I know it was also from the Nazi era, about how it's like, well, first they came for the communists and I didn't say anything, and then they came for the Jews and I didn't say nothing, and then they came for the, you know, you name it, and then they came for me, and by then it was too late. You know what I'm saying? Now is the time. Like, everybody listening tonight, get your family in on it, dude. We gotta, all your friends, we gotta oppose these fascist leanings, because even though it's not a majority right now, sooner or later, if enough people start thinking this way, they're gonna be a de facto majority, because the people that actually have common sense are gonna be too afraid to speak out. You know, and so now is the time to stop this shit. Otherwise, it's going to be time in a few years to start looking to get the hell out of this country before it gets too bad. And hopefully it doesn't get to that, you know, that extreme, but it could, you know. And so I don't think people want to leave their homes. People don't want to leave their friends and family behind to escape this. But, you know, sooner or later it might happen if we're not proactive about it, you know. And so something to keep in mind. I'm sure a lot of people saw Obama's speech in response to the San Bernardino terrorist attack, and basically he just advocated for more of the same, more drone bombings, keep bombing Syria, put our troops in there, not a full ground deployment, which they technically don't even really need anymore. But he, you know, just more of the same, and we see what's been going on in Syria. ISIS has been just growing and growing and growing. The more we bomb it, the more people come to their aid. The more more young youth are radicalized because they see the West as an imperial power in the Middle East, which they are, you know. And so when people see that, it radicalizes them and makes them want to go join the fight. If the U.S. begins deploying troops, like Obama said they were going to, albeit small amounts, that's going to be another call to action for any radical youth on the fence right now about joining the war. They see the U.S. troops going in there. Well, then guess what? Guess where they're going to go? They're going to go join the fight. So this is becoming a full-scale slaughter in Syria. There's, 65 countries? Obama said there are 65 countries that have joined this coalition. So there's 65 countries bombing in one country. If that's not a world war, I mean, I don't know what is. I mean, the world is already at war now. It's just that the massive scale fatalities haven't started rolling in yet. Yeah, there's been a good amount of people in Syria that have died already, over 300,000 at the last count. It's probably getting closer to 400,000 at this time. 13 million displaced, many of which are still in Syria trying to find somewhere to be safe, many of which have escaped Syria and flooded into Europe, many of which are trying to get into the United States. And all this rhetoric against Muslims, we got to keep in mind that it's all been manufactured, because there's so many Muslims trying to flee places that our own government have destabilized. You know what I'm saying? And so our government has destabilized countries. People are trying to flee those countries because they become destabilized. And then the same government wants to turn around and blame those people for our problems. And it's just so shallow a way of thinking about this stuff, and so reactionary. And that's why, unfortunately, Trump is gaining so much support. And I think today, after his announcement that he wants to completely ban Muslims from entering the country, more or less guarantees him the Republican nomination. As bad as that sounds, you got to think about the average Republican voter, and then think that the half of them are even dumber than that. Trump, if the votes are actually counted, Trump will probably be the Republican nominee. You know, and that's a pretty scary prospect that gives him a platform to speak and put out all this hateful rhetoric that he's been spewing, and it's going to continue on for another year if he becomes a nominee. And that is a very, very scary prospect, and it's going to lead to even more radicalization, not of Muslims, but of the right wing here in the United States. In fact, you know, the right wing terrorism is a greater threat to your safety than Islamic terrorism. The rate of killings by right-wing extremists is exponentially higher than Muslim extremists, but they're not talked about quite as much by the media. And once again, police in the United States kill a lot more people than both right-wing extremists and Muslim extremists put together. So we gotta keep in mind and keep this debate in based in reality, you know, because if we're walking around scared of every Muslim on the street, you know, you're just not living in reality, because almost every Muslim is a perfectly peaceful and nice human being. I'm sure people out there that actually have real Muslim friends in their lives can vouch for this idea. I know I have plenty, and I know none of them have ever inflicted violence upon me at all. And they all are looking for peace, many of which are, you know, refugees that escaped civil wars in the Middle East and U.S.-backed overthrows of governments. And I've got plenty of Iraqi Chaldean friends that are Christians from Iraq that had to flee after Saddam Hussein fell, because the regime that the U.S. put in its place was much less friendly to Christians, and all the sectarian violence that was created by the U.S. intervention. It's not good for any religious group. It's not only the Muslims that are getting the short end of the stick. It's also the Christians and other minority sects of Islam, you know, Yazidis and other groups in Syria, especially, because Syria was the most friendly to minority religions and minority groups. Now with ISIS and all these other so-called moderate rebels, which are Islamist rebels, taking over, it's become a very dangerous place for anybody that's not a, you know, Sunni Muslim, you know, because that's what ISIS subscribes by, and they believe that enforced by the down the barrel of a gun, you know. And so the Kurds aren't safe, even though they're mostly Muslim. And we all know that Turkey has been bombing the Kurds as well. And all this recent news about Turkey supplying or you know, funding ISIS by buying their oil and that kind of thing. Nobody's going to be safe over there in Syria if we allow this stuff to continue, and if we allow our allies to continue backing this Sunni insurgency over there, which is exactly what's been going on. And the U.S. has been a major sponsor of Sunni insurgency by proxy through Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and other Sunni Arab states that kind of created ISIS and created Al-Qaeda and backed these kind of rebel groups a lot for a long time, since the 70s and even before that. And, you know, the same policies that created ISIS are the same ones that created Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. And our politicians never really learned from it. In fact, if they did, well, then that's even worse, because they've been knowingly creating policies that would lead to this kind of uprising. Cynical as it sounds, I mean, if you look at the stock prices of these military industrial contractors, well, they're making big bucks, man. And who was it? One of these companies was caught on tape. We posted about it on the anti-media. Let me pull it up. One of these companies, these military contracting companies, was caught on tape basically, you know, saying that all this tension going on over there in Syria, it's good for business. You know what I mean? And so I don't even know how to put this, but, you know, there's representatives from Raytheon and Lockheed Martin were on this conference call, and they were caught on tape. I think the audio was leaked to The Intercept. But, you know, they're basically talking about how, yeah, ISIS is making us rich. You know what I mean? And so there definitely is a conflict of interest there. The argument could be made that these kind of groups and these kind of endless wars are manufactured strictly for the sake of making a bunch of money for people that make all these weapons, and they finance both sides of these wars, you know, and that makes it even worse. I mean, it's not even just for geopolitics and oil, which is bad enough, but now it's just these guys making money just so that, you know, making conflict just so they can make money off of the bombs, you know, and that's been going on for a long time. I know the Rothschilds had a long history back in the day, like during the 1700s, 1800s, of financing both sides of wars and things like that. Now, you know, modern times, we're not only financing them, but we're arming both sides and making our corporations are making billions off of it. And meanwhile, it's the U.S. citizens, the taxpayer, that are financing it. We're bankrolling it. We're paying for all the troops and all the bombs. Last count I saw, there was over 20,000 bombs dropped on ISIS, or on targets that the U.S. has claimed to be ISIS. 20,000 bombs, and you got to think, you know, how much do these Hellfire missiles cost? They're not cheap, man.
Million apiece.
They're really expensive. And we're talking about 20,000 of them, not just Hellfire, but in total, 20,000 bombs dropped. So somebody's making a lot of money off this stuff. You know,
Nick, the black market for arms worldwide is estimated at $2 trillion. So what you have is you have essentially another income tax from the U.S. going to people that we have no idea where they are offshore, being spread around mainly in cash but also in wire transfer. I mean, that's the kind of money we're looking at. We have another $2 trillion in the Middle East every year in oil sales. And then when you get into the opium coming out of Afghanistan, that's another trillion. So when you're looking at the entire GDP of the planet, 25% plus of it at least is black market, which is just a staggering number.
Yeah, and on the anti-media, we covered on the anti-media the day following the Paris terror attacks, there was a sharp uptick in military contractor stocks. You know, and so again, I want to get back to that point, the conflict of interest here. One could make the argument that military contracting companies like terror attacks. They want terror attacks because if there weren't terror attacks, if the world were at peace, well, then they'd be out of business, wouldn't they? You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, this is like the whole catch-22 that they found themselves in the Cold War. Because there weren't any huge major wars after Vietnam. And so there was kind of this cooling period. But there was also all this propaganda, this, you know, the Red Scare, the communists are coming to get you. And that gave the government carte blanche to do a military buildup and just keep building up arms and keep building up nuclear weapons and all these weapons that were never going to be used. But they kept on spending that money year after year after year because the propaganda was so strong. They keep telling us, yo, the communists are going to invade us. You know, we're going to all be speaking Russian pretty soon. And so that enabled them to keep making those trillions of dollars for the military-industrial complex. When the USSR fell, well, that kind of put them into a predicament. You know, well, the threat's gone. Now what? You know, how can the government continue to justify a military buildup when the main threat to the country is now gone, you know? And then 9/11 happened, and then it was all whole new, you know, same handbook with different names, different rhetoric, but it's the same exact book that they used, the same propaganda they used. Hey, let's build up because there's a bunch of terrorists. Let's build 20,000 MRAPs. And when we're done using them in Iraq and Afghanistan, hey, let's bring them home and put them on the American streets too, you know what I mean? And so all of this stuff needs to be seen from a historical perspective, and you know the post 9/11 buildup hasn't ended. And I don't want to go into any conspiracy theories here or anything like that. I just want to leave it at this: from the looks of it, financially speaking, these contractor companies, which we all know is one of the largest and most powerful lobbies in the United States, they like terrorist attacks to happen. I just want to leave it at that. We got a bunch of other. Go ahead.
It's I think I've noticed that they like to disguise economics as religion. They like to infuse and distract people from economic incentives with religion. They say, you know, it's Islamic extremism. But what is ISIS doing? ISIS is getting money from oil. You know, it's the economic factors. It seems like they distract us from the economic factors at any cost and put religion in place of that to, you know, confuse people. It really distracts people from the core, the most dominant forces in making things happen. So, you know, my solution to all of this is counter-economics, agorism, counter-culture, and we just have to get more creative and more voracious and more, you know, I think that if we spend every day living a lifestyle, you know, if we make our money doing what is good for society too, then that's how we solve the problem. You can't go you know, work for a corporation and then go home and then be on Facebook for a little bit trying to, you know, say some good things. You have to live the whole life, and it's just a grind, you know. Life is just a grind. Life is like that. It's always been like that. And if you see that in the historical perspective, you know just how hard life inherently is. So we have some really good conditions these days, you know. People have some really safe conditions compared to a lot of other times in history. So let's use this to the, you know, most we can. Let's actually make our culture, you know.
Yeah, man, great point, dude. And that's the way of doing it, you know. Combat it through economics, because a lot of this stuff comes down to it. And as you said, the economics of war can't be downplayed. I mean, these contractor companies caught on tape, you know, glorifying the fact that ISIS is rising, because it's going to make them a bunch of profits. I mean, they've already dropped 20,000 bombs on them. I saw a report last week that said that the U.S. military is now depleting too many bombs that it's not restocking, so that, you know, now spending is going to have to go up to replace all these bombs. And who's making the bombs? Well, you got Raytheon, you got Lockheed Martin, all these defense contracting companies that are going to be making these million-dollar bombs so they can keep dropping them over there. You know, and all that money is just being siphoned from you and I, the average person in the United States that goes to the store and spends money on groceries and that kind of thing and pays their rent and works for a paycheck. It's siphoning money from us directly to the military contractors, and, you know, they're owned by you know, cartel, more or less, of shady, wealthy industrialists. Of course, one off the top of the head is Dick Cheney, who recently had a statue put into D.C. for him for ending terrorism. You know, you can't make this stuff up, but, you know, these guys are on tape now basically saying, yes, we like the fact that ISIS is spreading because then we're going to make more money, you know, and so we can't downplay the fact that these guys are enjoying this bloodshed. They like it. They like seeing this stuff happen because it makes them a ton of money, and it makes us poorer. Everyone in the United States, the more and more we keep bombing, it's just the poor that the average tax-paying American is going to get. It's just going to keep robbing us blind.
The gun control issue is another example of how people, they just miss the point. They miss the economic point. I mean, people are poor, and then drugs are poured into poor areas, you know, and then you get an abundance of guns, and that's the equation. That's why, you know, gun control appears to, you know, in some people's eyes, work in Australia or something like that, but it's not the same in Australia, you know. Here you have many compounding factors, you know, for why guns are everywhere, why crime is high. Poverty, you know, lack of direction, culture, you know. It's the economic underlying thing, man. People just miss it. It's like if you're standing on a big, like, if you're standing on a ladder and you're looking at the sky, I don't know, you don't know what's below you. It's the foundation, you know?
Exactly, man, exactly. And there's we got a great article on the anti-media by Dan Sanchez, which I'm a huge fan. I think he's one of the best writers out there, and really fortunate to have him on the anti-media. And he's got an article up called "Nothing to Fear But the Fearful Themselves," and it's kind of a play on words from the old saying, "Nothing to fear but fear itself," which I think that was FDR, wasn't it? Am I mistaken?
Yeah, I think so.
The same guy that interned the Japanese. Anyway, I got a quote here from the article from Dan Sanchez. "I am not terrified of the terrorists, i.e. I am not myself terrorized. Rather, I am terrorized of the, I am terrified of the terrorized. Terrified of the bovine masses who are so easily manipulated by terrorists, governments, and the terror amplifying media into allowing our country to slip toward totalitarianism and total war. Now the result of that could be a statistically significant threat to myself and my family. Under an omnipotent government with permanent emergency powers, there would be a significant likelihood of my nephew being drafted to help occupy a foreign country, my daughter going hungry thanks to wartime economic planning, or myself being imprisoned or shot as a dissident." And, you know, to me, this quote really says it all here. It's not the terrorists that we need to fear. It's the way that it's terror attacks are capitalized on by the government and by the media to create a narrative. And that's exactly what Trump is capitalizing on in his presidential candidacy. He's capitalizing on all the fear that's been sown by the media. And, you know, fear sells. You know, the old saying goes, it's true. Fear sells. And so they're telling us to be afraid. I saw one of my friends on Facebook made a post the other day, and he's like, I'm just waiting for the media to tell us not to go outside. You know what I'm saying? And so, I mean, it's getting to that point. It's like, oh, you got to be afraid of black people. You got to be afraid of Mexican people. You got to be afraid of Muslim people. You got to be afraid of homeless people. You got to be afraid of poor people. You got to be afraid of anyone that's not a middle-class white person. That's more or less the... You know, that's more or less the message that is indirectly being sown by the media and by the politicians. And, you know, Obama goes up there and makes a speech last night and saying, hey, don't succumb to fear, guys, but let me scare the hell out of you with ISIS. You know what I'm saying? Underhandedly, Obama is supporting this narrative, even though he gives lip service to this idea that we shouldn't be condemning all Muslims or all groups of a certain color or a certain creed or a certain religion. Even though Obama kind of says, hey, that's not the way to go, his policies directly support that thinking. You know what I'm saying? He oversaw a lot of the militarization of the police. He has not done much to combat the drug war. He has done nothing but continue the foreign policy in the Middle East, which is the direct the exact reason why Muslims are vilified in the United States, because our foreign policy is the cause of the majority of organic terrorism that goes on in the world. So Obama got up there and said a bunch of good talking points in his speech. But to me, I was just listening and I was shaking my head. I'm like, this guy's an effing hypocrite. He's a hypocrite. He's saying a bunch of things that, yeah, what he's saying is true. But his policies are doing the exact opposite. His policies are exacerbating these problems with the vilification of Muslims and of Mexicans and of anybody that is a other in the eyes of the Trump supporters. You know, and Obama's playing right into Trump's rhetoric, and his policies are playing right into this fascist sentiment that's rising in the United States and elsewhere in the West. And it's not going to end until we put an end to this empire and start thinking with common sense. But the time to do that is now. It can't wait. We can't wait for another couple years. We can't sit by and say, hey, well, maybe we can get Bernie Sanders elected in 2016. Or, you know, I heard a bunch of people on the right like, well, maybe we can get Rand Paul elected. Well, what are the odds of that happening? Rand Paul's polling at 1%. Trump, the guy that sounds the most crazy out of the bunch, is polling at the top. Hillary Clinton, there's no way in hell Bernie Sanders is going to overcome Hillary Clinton at this point, especially with all this terrorism and all this stuff. Hillary Clinton's the tough talker. She's the one that's going to be just like Trump on foreign policy. You know, the media wouldn't allow that to happen. We can't sit by and wait for another 4 years or till 2016 and say, oh, let's just wait until to see how this election plays out. No. We don't have the time to wait around for that, because sooner or later in the next couple of years, we're going to be slipping into fascism, and there's going to be no way of turning it back until it caves in on itself, and that's going to be really ugly. You know what I mean? And so, I mean, Jake, what do you think about all this, man? I know you're sitting there thinking... Oh, we lost Jake. Jake's connection went bad. DB, you want to get back in this?
Comedy.
Hey, man, we've said it for years already now, dude, so it's just the slow creeper. What we like to call agenda creep as opposed to mission creep. And they just keep whittling away, getting to the kids in the schools now, dumbing them down in every single way. And, you know, it's what the Bolsheviks did in Russia, man. It took them 100 years for that plan to happen. And they crushed the Russian Empire. And I think the exact same people, the descendants of those exact same people, are trying to crush the American Empire. There's no world empire if there's countries. People need to just get that into their heads. When they wonder why there's an agenda to crush us, it's because there is no one world government without America out of the way.
Decent point, man. Thank you all for tuning in. DB, thanks for joining us. Cassius, thanks for calling in, bro. This is the Anti-Media Radio. Catch us 5 days a week, same place, same time. We'll be back Wednesday. Peace.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo, stereo.